is Radio Noordzee International.
This weekend and every weekend, RNI goes
24 hours a day
with programs in Dutch and English. Beam to the world
24 hours a day.
What a lineup of international personalities. As RNI goes
24 hours a day.
Sunday sees the World Service on shortwave. The In Concert Programme. The British Top 20.
Plus a solid hour of RNI hit bangs.
24 hours a day.
And it's all on RNI.
24 hours a day.
This weekend and every weekend. As RNI goes.
24 hours a day.
Noordzee International. Noordzee International. Noordzee International.
Radio Noordzee Internationaal. Dit is Dreammaster.
Ontdek het bij de HEMA.
Bij de HEMA.
Verbaas u bij de HEMA.
Bij de HEMA.
Doe meer, doe meer, doe meer met minder geld bij de HEMA.
Bij de HEMA hebben ze dat moderne voorgelijmde behang. In wel 20 decens. En al vanaf 6,25 een rol. Voorgelijmd behang.
Stimrol gum, Stimrol gum, Stimrol chewing gum. Stimrol is
the sportsman's gum.
Stimrol chewing gum, Stimrol chewing gum.
Traveling into the years gone by.
RNI.
Hit back.
This is Radio Nazi International on 1367 kilohertz.
Music radio. Music radio.
At 8:10 a.m. on the 22nd of November 1971, the Mebo 2 broadcast an SOS message to Scaveningen Radio. The ship had lost her anchor in force 12 winds and was drifting. Paul May takes up the story.
I can remember being woken about 20 minutes to wait. It must have been in the morning. I was thrown completely out of my bunk and landed on the floor. Duly picking myself up off the floor, I looked at my arm and I was gushing with blood. And like a fool, the week before I went off on holiday, I constructed a shelf just alongside my bed for laying my watch and personal effects, so on. And when I had been thrown from the bed, my arm had scraped along the side of the edge of the shelf and I was bleeding profusely, as the saying goes. The next thing I knew was a knock on the door, and it was one of the Dutch crew members saying, to the bridge with life jackets, anchor chain broke, in his broken English. And I don't think I've ever been so frightened in my entire life as that went through me. Shivers went down my spines, and one spine, yes, I only have one spine, contrary to popular opinion. Eventually staggered about trying to get dressed. And when I tried to put my trousers on, there was a technique in putting trousers on as well on a rocking boat. You had to sort of sit down on the edge of the bunk and pull them on one leg at a time, or two legs if you prefer, quickly get it over with. The boat lurched again and I was thrown up against the same flipping shelf and gashed the side of my head open. The door flung open at the same time, and I remember the other jockeys scurrying around in their cabin saying, oh, what are we going to do? So I just advised them to put something warm on and to take their passport, of all things. My mind, brain cells must have been dying at that time. We got dressed, or I was in the process of getting dressed. I got my trousers on and some boots on, but I couldn't put a shirt on because of the arm coming from, blood coming from the arm, and I flung the life preserver across my shoulder, and we staggered up to the bridge. Well, at this time, we were about 5 to 6 miles down the coast of Holland, and I could see the coastline coming closer. Leo van der Groot, who was the newsreader at that time, as the Dutch programs were on tape, was preparing his news when all this happened. And he closed the station down, put out an SOS, and we ceased then to broadcast. We closed the transmitters down because of the fact we were drifting into territorial waters. We were all up on deck at this time. The station was off the air. I think Franz, one of the engineers, Dutch engineers, technicians, took the crystals out of the transmitter and hid them up, supposedly, wherever the story goes. Well, at this particular time, our SOS message had to been picked up because there was a lifeboat alongside us, as close as it would get. And if you can appreciate the fact we were standing on a bridge, to the sea level was about a 60-foot drop. An incredible sensation if you were to jump. They placed a net on this lifeboat, and Captain Hardevelde, who was the captain at that particular time, ordered us to jump. He said, "Disc jockeys, jump." I grabbed onto the nearest pole, which happened to be supporting the TV aerial on the bridge, and I clung on that for dear life. I thought, no way, I'm going to hang on to this. You're going to have to pull me off of this, because there's no way I'm going to jump. Terry Davis, or at this particular time I can remember, was clinging on to the heating system, the radiator, and he was clinging on to that, and I don't think Terry moved from that particular spot through the entire 2.5-hour ordeal. That's how frightened that boy was. I was frightened. I thought, right, well, if this... I can remember then Captain Hardevelde saying, all right, he said, if you're not going to jump, he said, you'll have to go down with the ship. So he, because he, in his broken English, and I think he had Leo, as I mentioned, was a newsreader, interpret for us. And he was telling us that we would probably hit the rocks along the coast and would break up, and that would be our lot. He said you wouldn't live 5 minutes in the sea. If you didn't drown, you'd freeze to death. And it would probably be impossible, because of the currents and the tides, to be picked up by the lifeboat that was out there. I can remember, however, Mike Ross attempting to jump. He was on the lower deck, near the back of the stern of the boat, standing on the railings ready to jump. He didn't jump, so there we are. I can't remember him attempting to or thinking about it, because he was hanging on, put both feet on the railing and was ready to jump. I can remember going down to the production studio, and I thought, well, if this is my lot, I want people to know who I am, especially my family, my loved ones. And I made a tape, a very small, short tape. I think it lasted about 4 or 5 minutes. And things were crashing down in the studio, and oh, I thought, this is my lot. And my voice, people don't like it under normal circumstances, but they ought to have heard it when it was full of nerves. I then took the tape off the Revox and wrapped it in a polythene bag and stuffed it inside my shirt. And I thought, well, if I go down, this is liable to survive, so they'll be able to tell who I was, so on. Just on the tape, I put a message to my loved ones. Went back to the bridge, and the next thing that I can remember happening was the fact that we were at least 15 to 20 miles down the coast. We were actually nearer Belgium than anything else. And that a tug was coming out to tie onto us and drag us about. And I can remember a Dutch Royal Navy Hercules, I think it was, an aircraft, circling above us. And as I say, there was still a lifeboat. And we had contact with the shore, with the ship-to-shore radio, and just strange things were happening. Everything was, everyone thought it was the end.
Brian McKenzie takes up the story.
Everyone was just so nervous. I remember Mike Ross passing around cigarettes in the hand, literally just shaking like a leaf. And Terry kept setting off this alarm buzzer with his head, because his head was nodding back and forward. And he kept hitting this alarm thing, which used to scare the hell out of everyone until he was dragged away from it, because everyone was really so tense. And Terry setting this thing off, giving you another fright. I mean, it was getting to a stage where someone would have just dragged him from it, you know, anyway. And then we were going closer to the beach, and they couldn't get the engine started. There was something fault had developed, and they couldn't build up the pressure. So then they tried to drop the auxiliary anchors, and they went down, but they were being dragged, obviously. Just no way could they stop the thing. They got the engine started again, but they couldn't go forward because of the anchors. So they had welding torches, and they cut both anchors, and then the thing started to inch its way forward bit by bit. And by this time, a tug had come out. They got a line across, and the first one snapped. And then they got a second one on, which held, and that was it. But at that point, I think we were about half a mile from the beach. I mean, you could see the beach as clear as hell. And then we, I think, for about 2 days, we were being towed up and down the coast. At one point, I think we were nearer Britain than we were Holland.
Time now on Radio North Sea International. Happens to be 10 o'clock. News time.
R&I Worldwide News.
Good evening, this is Terry Davis. Two survivors from the... Now a progress report on the activities of the Mebo 2, that's us. The radio ship Mebo 2 has recently passed Imuden at the distance of approximately 6 miles and is at present at the following position. 52 degrees 16 minutes north, 4 degrees 2 minutes east. We are being towed by the tug Smithbank in a northerly direction along the coast of Holland, and we hope to anchor sometime tomorrow in calmer waters. This is R&I News. The next bulletin will be at 11 o'clock.
You're riding with music in
Paul May.
We had contact with the shore, with the ship-to-shore radio, and just strange things were happening. Everything was... Everyone thought it was the end.
It was the 10:16 and a half from Radio North Sea International, swinging Europe time with Paul May, and, well, I guess it's about time I get serious. I guess it's about time I get something off my chest, too. Well, it's not often I apologize for my on-air performance, which can be bad at times, I must admit, but I feel for all those that heard the 7 o'clock news bulletin must have thought, what a bad performance. Also, a rundown of what actually happened on board the Mebo 2 for the day. And I guess my only defense is, even though it might sound poor, but basically I was scared silly for my life this morning when the action took place, as I imagine most of the disc jockeys were. And I think it just got hold of me between the hours of 6 and 7. You know, you kind of put it off in your mind that nothing's going to happen, and then your nerves grab hold of you, and that's basically what they did this evening. It may be a poor excuse, but, well, I think I defy anyone to come out here and go through what the rest of the disc jockeys did and sit behind a microphone and sound happy and gay. And it's rather difficult. Anyway, I felt badly about it, and there were a lot of people interested in knowing what the activity was on board the Mebo 2 today. So I thought I'd give you a quick rundown on the highlights of what happened. So I guess in summing up, though, we can actually... The activity involving the radio ship Mebo 2 on this Monday, November the 22nd, was that of a frightening but a concerning incident. It was about 10 minutes of 8 this morning that it all started.
The funny part, really, getting back to our old anchor position, and we were getting towed along there, and the tugboat wouldn't drop us. For some reason, they wanted to keep pulling us around because they were making a lot of money out of it. So the end, we had to cut the tow rope to stop the ship, because by then the engines were working perfectly. And the tugboat just carried straight on. It didn't even stop or anything, which was amazing at the time. Obviously, they were trying to get as much money out of it as possible, and they made a fortune. I mean, to come out and pull you around must have cost a vast amount of money.
Makes me happier than a...
Just before Christmas, the World Service closed, although AJ's DX program continued.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Wherever you may be listening in RNI's worldwide listening land, this is yours truly, AJ Behrens, with the September edition of North Sea Goes DX. This time we have DX information, solution of the DX contest, P.O. Box 113 is calling thee, and the history of Radio Hauraki, New Zealand. Due to the length of the latter item, no station is highlighted in this edition.
During early 1972, R&I was planning an all-day English service on an alternative frequency of 388 metres, 773 kilohertz, using the X-Radio 390 10.5 kilowatt transmitter. During the early hours of the 27th of March 1972, this transmitter was tested, unknown to the DJs who were talking in the studio.
Hello. But there's a short in that.
Is there?
Yes, yeah, just a wee bit.
No, get the boys
anyway, yeah, you get the boys on it. Get the boys on it.
How's that deck?
That deck is still
ill.
Extremely
ill.
Yes, it's still ill. Are we going out in the air?
I've no idea.
Oh. Well, I won't say it then.
We're still putting out a beautiful signal upstairs.
Oh, we really are.
Oh, it's lovely, yeah. A little bit of fun, but beautiful.
Yes, well, we wouldn't have said some of
the wouldn't have said some of the things we've just said had we known that.
Oh, tell it.
It was not until the 30th of September 1972 that the alternative English service started, but on a different frequency of 192 metres, 1562 kilohertz, and called RNI-2. This was just after Radio Veronica had changed frequency to 538 metres.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the start of test broadcasts from Radio Naughty International 2. We're transmitting on 192 metres in the medium wave band, 1562 kilohertz. Radio Veronica will be resuming their broadcasts at 1 o'clock Central European Time on 538 metres medium wave. That's 557 kilohertz. The management and staff of the Radio Naughty Network throughout Europe would like to take this opportunity to wish all of our friends over at Radio Veronica best of luck in the years to come. In order not to interfere with other transmitters on this frequency, we shall be closing down our test transmissions at 7 o'clock in the evening.
On the 23rd of February 1973, the anchor chain broke once again, and the ship headed towards the coast. Don Allen broadcast an SOS message.
Well, I had finished my program, I'd read the news, and I thought it was rather peculiar at the time when I was reading the news. The ship sort of tipped over a little too much, as far as I was concerned, to the right or to the left. Anyway, I came upstairs after finishing the news and looked out the window. It was a very clear night. But I was very amazed to see that the faces of people in cars going by, and I thought, well, you know, this is a clear night. This is bloody ridiculous. It's not that clear. I'm sure that we're, you know, within about a mile from shore. And the captain and Mike Ross were playing cards at the time, and I said, you know, are we drifting? The captain said, no, it's ridiculous. I said, well, at least come here and look over, you know, out through the porthole window. They reluctantly got up and looked out the porthole window. As soon as they saw our position, you know, everybody immediately made a, you know, Brian McKenzie's rock and roll show was going on at the time, and we immediately had to cease broadcasting. I went downstairs and said that as we thought we were inside of territorial waters, we are now going off air, we believe we're drifting. And sure enough, we were drifting. We were, I would say, at the at the closest, we are no more than 600 yards from shore.
The time is now 15 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock Central European time, and we stop transmissions as we believe that our anchor chain has broken. There is no need for alarm. The anchor chain on board the Mebo 2 has broken, and this has been spotted in time. We are now ceasing transmissions until we are safely back into international waters. This is Radio North Sea International, now going off air. We have broken our anchor chain, or are dragging our anchor chain, and we are inside the 3-mile limit. We are going off air momentarily until we are back into international waters. So, once again, we repeat, Radio North Sea International is going off air temporarily while we adjust our position off the coast of Skavingham.
And it was a very frightening experience. Everybody was told to put on their life jackets and forget about your suitcases, just worry about yourself, you know. I could just imagine, had we drifted ashore, you know, everybody in life jackets holding up their passports type of thing.
Funny, funny.
But we did manage to get out to sea again. It took us, I think, a day and a half to eventually get the ship back out there. It was a steady grind because there was a storm going on. A storm brewed up after this, after we had broken anchor. And we were fighting against the storm, trying to get back to our position. And then at one stage, we went past Caroline. He thought that we were anchored and they were drifting, and they started sending up red flares, and it really caused a, you know, a mayday crisis. Both ships were sort of panicking, especially Caroline, because they had no motor at all. And they were sending up red flares. The whole sea that night was lit up with red flares all over the place from the Caroline ship, because they thought that they were drifting, and we knew that we were drifting. But as I say, eventually, a day and a half later, we got another anchor. The ship came out immediately and put a new anchor on the ship, and that was the end. I never experienced that again.
On AM, FM, and shortwave, this is Music for Young Europe on Radio North Sea International.
220.
RNI.
Dynamite.
Wonderful radio to RNI.
It is Radio North Sea.
Auf Kurzwelle, Mittelwelle und UKW.
International.
Radio North Sea makes you happy.
Wonderful radio to RNI. On medium wave and short wave and FM.
Radio.
Start of the international service on Radio North Sea. RNI broadcasts in the medium wave band of 220 meters, that's 1367 kilohertz, in the 49 meter short wave band at 6205 kilohertz, and on VHF channel 44 at 100 megahertz. Radio North Sea International, the voice of Europe, the sound of the world.
220
RNI
Dynamite.
During 1974, the Dutch government were finalising their plans to close the offshore radio station. Apart from RNI, there was Radio Veronica, Radio Caroline, and Radio Atlantis.
Months away, but Veronica today.
Radio Caroline.
Radio Atlantis. Set them up.
So stomp your feet and get heavy. Just listen in to catch a spin. They're on the ball, they got it all at RNI. RNI is here to stay. It's never going away. We're gonna rock together. RNI is radio, a station on the go.
It was later announced that the Dutch Marine Offences Act would come into force on the 1st of September 1974. RNI, along with Veronica and Atlantis, decided to close the day before, as did their English counterparts in 1967. However, as in 1967, Radio Caroline was to continue, but this time obtaining her supplies from Spain.
We knew the station was closing down for about a month, I think, before that. And, well, actually more than a month. The Dutch government kept postponing the date. I think it would be about a period of 6 months could have been involved in it, from when they originally said, that's it, we're going to close the stations down. And, of course, every week after that, you're waiting for the announcement to come that a date would be set. And then all of a sudden they said, right, that's it.
Radio Norte, International Station!
Bob Noakes.
A couple of days before Norte went off the air, so it would have been about the 29th of August, all the Dutch disc jockeys, I think without exception, came out onto the ship. There was a plan at one time to have the Meebo 1 alongside for them to sleep on, but that didn't materialise, and they all had to sleep in our ship. They slept in the workshop. One of them even slept in the studio. They were sleeping all over the place, all these Dutch guys. They'd never been on the ship before except for visits, and they were actually living on the thing for 2 days. Fortunately, it was beautiful weather. They didn't get seasick. When they came out with an incredible armada of other ships. Remember that, Robin?
Oh, that was beautiful.
Dozens of these boats, all honking horns, sailing.
As far as the eye could see, right over the horizon, everywhere there was.
Well, there must have been
ships.
20 odd of large, boats and loads of yachts and things going around. Amazing, beautiful sunny day, and Gerrit Smit was doing his program live on the bridge at that time, the Buitengaats. And that was coming down very well, all this honking of horns going out over the air. Great fun.
Radio Nordsee International.
The final English programme from R&I was broadcast between 8 p.m. and midnight on the 30th of August, 1974.
Dawn handled basically all the administration work, and for the final hour and the final night's programming, we basically worked it out between us, because most of our decisions were arrived at that way, latterly, because we had a good team out there. And for that, we basically put ideas together and decided we'd do our own little shows and then do the last hour, Don and I together.
Ryan McKenzie, turn on a smile.
And a very good evening, everyone. It's 2 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock. This is yours truly, Daffy Don Allen, with you. The final hour, my final hour, with Radio Nordsee International. From now until 9 o'clock this evening, we've got music coming your way. From 9 until 10 p.m. this evening, it's Robin Banks. From 10 until 11, it's Brian McKenzie. From 11 until 12 midnight, it's the whole of the international service of RNI. Don Allen, Brian McKenzie, Robin Banks, Roger Kent, and Bob Noakes. Anyway, we welcome you on into our final broadcast here on the international service of Radio North Sea International.
Fun, love, and R&I, the music machine. I am listening. I am listening into Robin Banks.
That'll be for the last time, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's
good. I see. Get away. Go out of the studio, King Kong.
On your feet, R&I listeners, it's Robin Banks.
Hi. Here is King Kong on the Robin Banks Show. That is a good show.
Just need no more.
Fun loving R&I loves you.
Timing's time in Central Europe is now exactly 11 o'clock, and we bring you the final hour of broadcasting from the English service of Radio North Sea International.
R&I!
Meebo 2 rocks on.
It's 29 minutes now to the hour of 12 midnight here on Radio North Sea International. This is yours truly, Daffy Don Allen, along with...
Brian McKenzie. it's a very, very... difficult at times, isn't it? We were talking about Don and I before we came on to do the show for a close down. I've never had to do a close down on a station before. When I was the last radio station I worked in, it closed and I was off the ship. And with Don, I think it's been the same.
Well, actually, with me, the first time we sort of envisaged a shutdown. I was very, very lucky indeed. I did the final country and western jamboree on Radio Caroline North, and then, of course, lo and behold, unbeknown to us, in the middle of the night, we were towed away. And with Manx Radio, I spent about 7 hours putting together a final hour, and then I decided the next day, it was on a Saturday, that I would do it live. So I've still got that tape at home. I've never ever really played it. It was all full of sobs and things like this, but it's terrible, really. Anyway, for those of you tuning in for the first time, I imagine there is quite a few listening in to...
Get ourselves together for lots of the people who have been listening. Well, Nordsee has been on the go for 4 years. There's been many, many people work with the international service since then.
And we've got Andy Archer coming up in a few seconds' time, and he's going to tell you exactly how many people were on the ship.
On AM, FM, and shortwave, this is Music for Young Europe on Radio North Sea International.
I wonder how many of you know the number of people involved on this side of the operation over the 4 years. In German, you would say 51. In Dutch, you'd say 51. And in English, you'd say 51. So let's see how many of the names you can remember as we start right back in the beginning in 1970 with the three German language disc jockeys, namely Horst Reiner, Hannibal, and Axel. And then there was Vic Pelle, Eva Feister, Kurt Bauer, and Bruno Brandenburger. The first English disc jockeys to work on the station were Johnny Scott and Roger Day. They were followed by Carl Mitchell, Mark Wesley, Spangles Muldoon, David Gregory, Stephen Ladd, David Rogers, Andy Archer, Alan West, Duncan Johnson, Michael Lindsay, John Denny, Rob Eden, Mike and Sheila Ross, Larry Tremaine, and then the friend of all the disc jockeys everywhere in the world, A.J. Behrens, Tony Allen, Martin Kane, Stevie Merrick, Ray Cooper, Ed Marino, Crispian St. John, Roger Kirk, Mark Stewart, Paul May, Brian McKenzie, Terry Davis, Arnold Lane, Don Allen, Steve Berry, Ian Anderson, Mark Slate, Steve King, Graham Gill, Terry Campbell, Robin Banks, Roger Kent, Jason Wolfe, Bob Noakes, Peter and Werner Hartwig, and Pierre Desain. Now that totals to 51, all the people involved on the international side of Radio North Sea over the last 4 years. May I say thank you to Mr. Bollier and Mr. Meister for bringing me back into radio 4 years ago, and I always look back on my experiences on North Sea with a lot of pleasure, so thank you very much indeed, and best wishes to you and to all the disc jockeys on Radio North Sea International.
Radio North Sea International!
As the seconds tick away, 5 minutes left of the international service, and then it's, as Don said once again, memories, and we hope that from our part, that as you, the listener, will look upon the memories as being happy ones, and that we've brought a little bit of happiness into your life, and maybe cheered you up when you've been down, and played music that you found pleasing to the ear. If we've succeeded in that, then I think we can all say to ourselves, well, it was all worth it. It was worth sitting on a ship, and everything we believed in is worth doing. I think you would agree on that, Don.
Wholeheartedly. Just one person we haven't said hi to. I don't know whether or not she'll be able to pick us up this evening. From what I understand, she lives in Italy now. Perhaps she's back in Switzerland for the time being. And I must admit, jokingly, I've had my trials and tribulations with her. She's a very temperamental gal, Eva Pfister, if you're listening. Well, I don't think her name is Pfister now, is it?
No, she's married.
Yeah, she's married now. Anyway, Eva, if you're listening, a very good evening to you. And we hope that you're enjoying the final hour here on Radio North Sea International. I hope that sometime in the near future, perhaps myself or Brian, we'll come across you again. And it'll be nice to talk about old times.
Definitely will be, because there's so many people who've been connected with the station. Vic Pelle, who was looking after us for some time, and then Eva from Zurich. And, of course, the two men themselves from Zurich, Mr. Meister and Mr. Bollier. And for them, it's also, I know, very, very sad. So we're going to leave you with a piece of music, really, which to us is, well, very, very dear to us, and it's dear to Radio North Sea International, to most of you who've been listening. So, really, we're going to just say a Wiedersehen and bye-bye from every one of us on the international service. This is Peter and Peace.
We played this record because it was significant to the advertising, if you want to call it that, that we used to do on the World Service about this world situation, you know, starving children and that. And we used to appeal over the air to give generously to, well, I can't think of the organization right offhand, but they look after starving, hungry children of the world. And we used to advertise this on the World Service because the shortwave service used to be heard all over the place, all over the world, in America, in all over Europe and places like that. And I'm sure that in some small way we contributed to the welfare of these deprived children. So therefore, the record piece was a very significant one, because when you listen to the words of it, it means exactly what it says. Whoever wrote it certainly put a lot of feeling into it, and this was a record that was recommended by Zurich to be played in conjunction with these commercials that we made for the this campaign that we had on the ship for these deprived children of the world, the starving and the hungry.
Peace is a flower that grows in the sunshine. Its petals are raised to the sky. Peace is harmony, love and understanding. Oh, wow. Can't we have peace?
It's always sad when you see something like this come to an end, you know, when organized society, if we want to use that expression, puts the clamps on something that doesn't fall under its umbrella, yet does no harm. I can't see R and I doing any harm. I couldn't see Caroline doing any harm. I couldn't see any of the stations doing any harm.
Timing's time in Central Europe is now exactly midnight, and the international service of Radio North Sea is now closing down.
It is Radio North Sea.
Auf Kurzwelle, Mittelwelle und UKW.
International.
And it was a funny feeling. We closed down, and the Dutch programs came back on again. And we thought that was us, finished. And the next day, I mean, the ship was absolutely packed with people, literally. There was bodies sleeping in workshops, in corridors, and God knows what else. Yeah, they were going to continue until midnight, and then they decided, no, it was too late. They would lose a lot of the audience. So they made it 8 o'clock. So we came in on the Ferry Mart programme. De Mol, again, was on the ship, and he said, well, now the English guys can say goodbye to their Dutch listeners. So we went into the studio and said a few words to over the air to the Dutch listening audience, and then we thought, well, that's it for us. Then Bolly arrived on the ship, along with his wife, kids, Meister, and his girlfriend. And, I mean, both studios were just packed. You have no idea how many people were out on that boat. You just couldn't move. And he was talking in German to De Mol, and I can understand a little bit of German, and I could gather he was in an argument with him. And he had his speech prepared as to what he was going to say. And he was saying something I was picking up about in English. De Mol was saying, no, no English, it's finished. Bolly saying, yes, it isn't English. As it transpired, he turned around and said, there's a copy of the speech in English. So after I do my farewell speech, you come on immediately after me and read it in English. Ah. And I near died, because this was about half an hour before his speech. And this, to me, was this ream of paper. And I thought, my God, I'm going to make a terrible mess of this, because I've no time really to read it over and prepare it and get the inflections right. So I was really heart-pounding anyway. Arrived, Bolly went into the studio, Ferry Mart was panel operating.
Luisteraars, we zijn nu te ontvangen op 3 verschillende golflengten. We zijn eruit op 220 meter middengolf. Welkom ook de 49 meter Europa-band. Luisteraars op de korte golf en verder via FM-kanaal 44. Tot u spreekt een van de eigenaren van de boot, Edwin Bollier.
Lieve vrienden van Radio Noordzee Internationaal. Als wir unser Schiff, die Mebo 2, vor nunmehr
über 4... Very watery-eyed at that point. And then Ferry came on, said something. And Bolly got up from the chair he was sitting on, shook my hand, and said, with the hand, just give a gesture, and the chair is yours, more.
The words of Mr. Edwin Bollier will now be translated in English by Brian McKenzie.
Thank you, Ferry. Dear friends of R&I, when we anchored our ship, the Mebo 2, off the Dutch coast over 4.5 years ago, we did not know what to expect there. We were, of course, familiar with Holland, and also we had business friends there in the past. However, what has developed here during the last few years, especially during the period of our partnership with Bazaar, has really been more than just a normal business contact. We have found so many real friends in Holland that we are deeply impressed. When we came here, we were strangers. Now we are leaving as friends. This is perhaps the most fitting way of saying it. However, our friends in Bussum are not the only ones we would like to express our gratitude to. We are also well aware of the fact that we owe a lot of our immense success to you, our listeners. A commercial radio station without its listeners is simply unthinkable. We would not be able to exist. We would therefore like to thank you as well for remaining loyal to us in good as well as bad times, for helping R&I to become what it was supposed to be, a radio station for young Europeans. Your loyalty has shown that our concept has been right. Let me also thank everyone else involved in the R&I venture. Dear listeners, you're all really helped to make this experiment a great success, and we are really proud of your efforts. And our sincere thanks also go to R&I's innumerable advertising clients. We hope that we were able to sell your products and services we advertise for you even better than before. Finally, we would also like to express our special thanks to the press for such a positive attitude and for objective reports, all of which helped to improve the extent of which our problems were understood. finally, dear listeners of Radio North Sea International, the time has come for us to say goodbye. We would love to have stayed, but as you know, the Dutch government has banned the broadcasting of radio programs from ships lying outside Dutch waters as from September the 1st, 1974. And we certainly do not want to do anything which is illegal. The only alternative we have, therefore, is to obey the law and stop broadcasting. Once again, we would like to express our sincere thanks to all of you and wish you all the very best in the future. And who knows, perhaps you'll hear us again sometime in the future. Goodbye, Dag vrienden, God bless you all.
There was about 15 minutes left to go at that point. And I'm not sure if it was then that Bolly just broke down, started crying in the studio in front of everyone, which he didn't try and stop it in any way. And it wasn't put on, it was just something he felt, you know, which was very moving. And I think it shows something of who he was, as a person. He just let it go. It was his baby and it came to an end, the whole bit. And everyone was very touched about it, really, the whole thing. Well, Dutch, English, disc jockeys and management and crew and everyone else.
Stood there in the two studios, the two adjoining studios, the large one, such as it was, and the small one, with all the doors open. We all stood around there saying nothing, just looking at each other for fully 3 minutes, and nobody said a word, and hardly anybody moved. We just sort of stood around there aghast. It had happened. We just didn't believe that it had happened. Everything was still running. The generators were still running. Transmitters were still on the air, but not a sound. You just weren't doing anything. It was incredible. Then old Roger Kent came round and said, "Ah, well, wasn't Holland's year, was it? And they lost the World Cup." That sort of broke the ice. Anyway, the next day, the next morning, Mebo 1 came out, and it was a slightly overcast morning, and it had the air, I can't describe it, but it had the air of a day that you know is going to start calm and get very rough. It was that sort of a day. Mebo 1 came alongside, and all the jocks got off, with the exception of you, Rob, and myself, and also Don Allen, who was in bed and couldn't get up. Poor old Don. And Mebo 1 went off to glory in the harbour, thousands of crowds sort of piping them in. Apparently all the little fishing boats had their flags at half mast, and there were thousands and thousands of people there waiting to meet them.
But of course we got stranded there for longer, as did Meister, who came on to supervise engineering himself. The weather blew up very bad after about 3 days, and we ended up staying for about a week, which set us back quite considerably, which could have some effect on the fact that we got impounded as well, because we were well behind schedule.
We were able, though, while we were at sea, to get the transmitters in a different shape. Meister personally got the 100K on a new frequency. It was on 12... Was it 1367 it was originally, wasn't it? We were on 220. Meister tuned it to 1232.
Yeah, 244, yeah.
244 metres, got it working very well on that. Into a dummy load, of course. You and I spent most of the time trying to get the BTA-10 together.
Which is already kaput.
Oh, it had been on fire or something, hadn't it?
We had lots of jobs to do anyway, cleaning the transmitters and rerouting wiring. And of course, after we'd gone off the air, we discovered a lot of things which would have given us problems anyway. Most of the time we were on the air pretty well 21 hours a day, weren't we? 24 hours a day, most of the time, 2 days a week, 21 hours, which didn't give us a great deal of time to do engineering. So as a result, we had a lot of things to tidy up, which needed doing for about 2 or 3 years, I imagine.
Yeah. Eventually, the weather broke. That week was very bad. It was never, I think, less than about a 4.7. And it was a full week, maybe 8 days, I can't remember, until the weather was calm enough for us to get in. I remember I'd gone to bed, and the tug came along while I was in bed. Really gave the Mevo 2 a hell of a bashing, because it came along at the very front of the ship, of course, by the prow, the worst possible point to tender, to cut the anchor. Bobby Schmidt came in and said, "Oh, Bob, come on, Nordsee goes to Veronica." I said, "Oh, that's amazing." So I got up. We did go right past Veronica within 100 metres or so. They had a tender alongside, and everybody on board was waving at us. Now, I think it was a very nice touch, because we didn't have to go past Veronica. It was actually a detour on the way to Rotterdam, but we went past Veronica slowly. We towed past them, we waved, and it was, I think, a very nice gesture to do that. They were, after all, the first there. I thought it was very appropriate. They should also be the last there. About 2 hours later, we started going into the Hook Canal, the canal that goes into Rotterdam. And we were, I think, 3 hours in that canal, weren't we, Robin? Mm. 3 hours going down
getting
this canal,
the bridges,
which is enormous. Well, there were no bridges at this point, but there were ferries going backwards and forwards, and funny people in cars, just like the Woolwich ferry, only yellow, and people waving at you as it went past, and everybody on the shore, binoculars and things, and looking at this amazing brightly coloured ship with a monstrous mast coming in. And we got to within about a kilometre of Rotterdam Central Station, a place called the Bumpjeskade. It was at Rotterdam Blark, and we stopped there for the night. You know, the customs came on board, they cleared us. Quite friendly, actually. They had a couple of cans of beer, and we were all very optimistic at this point. We thought, great, you know, everything's fine, everything's signed and sealed, won't have any hassles here. And they sealed up the records and cassettes and things, which we expected, sealed those up. Normal, it's a normal procedure when you come in with a ship, you seal up certain things, and when you've gone out to sea again, you can break the seals. I don't understand the law, but that's apparently quite a normal thing. When we were in the harbour the following morning, I think it was Lonas went up and undid the capacity hat of the aerial and lowered it down into the lattice section. And then we were slowly towed around. But this time, of course, it was a bright, sunny day. Everybody had noticed the ship was there. And there were a few police standing around, keeping them back. Not that it was, you know, rabble. A few people came on board and had a look around, but we were a bit wary at that point of what sort of liberties we let people take. And we were turned round in full circle in the river. And we went back to a fork in the river, turned a hairpin round that fork. People all the way along cheering us, taking photographs. And went under a lift bridge, which is one of those bridges that lifts up with the actual span still horizontal all the way. And it had to be lifted to about 3 feet or 4 feet more than its normal level. I was told that they had to break the insurance seals on the lifting mechanism and get this bridge, this extra height, so that our masts would just about clear under it. And we stood on the front there, do you remember? Mm-hmm. We stood in the cage around what had been the high-tension insulator.
Yes. We didn't believe that we'd get underneath, because it's very deceptive when you were coming up against the bridge.
Oh, it was a frightening
sight.
Just
cleared it by about 5 inches, I believe.
Oh, an incredible sight. And of course, the people, this is right in the centre of Rotterdam, and there were buses, and people in the buses totally spaced out, and this massive, gaily coloured ship floating through. And we went through canals, and about 2 hours after that, we were in Slikkevier. Everything was stripped out. The entire contents of the vessel were completely stripped out, and bit by bit repaired if necessary, maintained, cleaned, and put back. And at the time of recording,
there
was the ship
masses
is
of work done in a short space.
It's incredible. Mm. We cleaned out the transmitters. That was our biggest job. I mean, it doesn't sound much, cleaning a transmitter, but it took that in itself to a couple
laden
of weeks,
in
didn't
luck,
it?
Wasn't it?
You put in the new studios.
Basically, we rebuilt all the studios and rerouted wiring that needed rerouting, and replaced components that need replacing. Mm.
Did 1,001 jobs that had been botched up at sea because there wasn't time to properly attend to them. You know, we made everything good. In the cable corridor, there were dozens of cables that went nowhere and were broken, and nobody knew anything about them. Bit by bit, we got them all sorted out until the ship was...
The end product gave us something, a unit that was totally working and completely non-suspect. There was no chance of anything failing, in other words.
Mm.
It's working perfectly.
And so concludes the story of R&I, perhaps a pirate radio enthusiast's dream. The story of an idea which became a reality, and with it brought thrills, fun and excitement, and most of all, entertainment into the homes of millions of listeners, not only in England and Holland, but most of the world.
I have very fond memories, yes. It was the best time of my life, in many ways. I hope I've got better times to come. I'm still quite young, but... I did enjoy those days. Great fun. Although really the station, if you think about it, was a bloody shambles. It was so amateur, isn't that true?
The days at Naughty were very, very good for me. Mainly because it taught me a lot more about life, which I think if I hadn't gone to the station, it would have taken me a longer time to pick up that sort of knowledge. It's made me aware of traveling and meeting people from different countries. It's made me aware of the power of radio as well. You know, I didn't realize the power of any media, but certainly the time out on the ship made you realize when you were receiving, you know, there's numbers of letters from people, and some of the letters quite pathetic in their own way, yet others that were so boisterous. There were so many letters egging us on to keep on going, you know. And that's the reason the station was so good, is because the listeners were devoted, I think. And it just shows you what human character's about when they can sit and listen to what is classed as illegal broadcasting from a ship. And, you know, they've got so much else to listen to. yet they choose the ship, you know.
I do look back on Nordsee, I think, is something I wouldn't have passed up for anything, because it's a part of history. And in a funny sort of way, it's nice to be involved in a part of a history of some kind, which the pirate stations were the first ones, around about the 64, 67 era. And then, like, the second lot with Nordsee, Caroline at that time, and Veronica altogether, which was like another little era. And sure, to me it was something, someone asked me, would I do it again? Yes, definitely. All in life, all in life.
Radio Nordsee International.